All right, let's go to Genesis 48. Last time we were together, we ended in 47 by talking about what?
Joseph and his brothers. And we revealed himself to his brothers
yet? Yeah, remember he revealed himself. His ultimately, Jacob has been brought to Egypt. He's even met with the Pharaoh. Jacob has met with him. What land did Jacob's family settle in? Land of Goshen. We're also aware that near the end of chapter 47, how old was Jacob when he passed? Now, he's not passed yet, but the writer gives us, Moses gives us a forward look at how old he will be. 147, which means he lived in the land of Egypt after settling there for how long? 17 years. And so he lived to what we would think is a ripe old age of 147. You'll notice a sharp decline from Jacob to Joseph. How long would Joseph live? Anybody know? 110. That's getting close to our numbers, right? It's not that far off. He lives a good long life. But in 48, 49, we were given some important information as he nears the end of his life. We get into 48, we find out right away what? Your father is ill. And the implication, I believe, there is terminally. They know the end is shortly away. And so what does Joseph decide to do? He wants to bring Manasseh and Ephraim to Jacob to be blessed. Now, who's the older? Manasseh, and this is real important. You need to know this in order to really get what's going on here. Manasseh is the older of the two boys. Ephraim is the second. So at this point, how many sons does Joseph have? Two. Now, he might have more later on. I actually don't know that Scripture ever tells us more, but it relates that he may have more children. We'll see that in just a second. One other important background information. When you look at birthright inheritance, what's the law of birthright inheritance? It's not that complicated. It's pretty simple, but what's that now?
Firstborn.
Now, this is really the rule for the firstborn. If you're second and you've got 10 brothers, sorry. Even though you got close, you didn't win, right? Firstborn gets double the inheritance of his brothers. That's really important, especially when it comes to the end of Jacob's life. So, who should get the greater blessing? Manasseh should get the greater blessing. That's not how it plays out, though, as you can probably figure out. Let's go. Let's go down. Let's see. Go down to verse 5 and notice here. This is Jacob. He says, "And now your two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, are mine." What's Jacob saying? They're going to be amongst the number of my children. And I want you to notice one detail here that we might overlook, and I honestly have overlooked it in the past until I was going back and studying it. Notice what he compares them to. He says, "They are mine." We're still in verse 5. This is Genesis 48:5. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine. Notice what Jacob just did. He flipped them, didn't he? So notice that theme. Shall be mine. Then notice this comparison. as Reuben and Simeon are. What's significant about Reuben and Simeon? They were the first and second children of Jacob. And now he says Ephraim and Manasseh are comparable to Reuben and Simeon. Sorry to say Simei. That's not there. Simeon, right? So he's putting them on equal level. Now, why is this important? Why do we need to read this? What did Jacob just do? It's pretty important. He claimed them as sons, but why is that significant? I agree. Okay. Keep going down that thought. What? Okay. So, we look at our map. Tell me what name, you can see it up here too, what name is conspicuously missing? Who? Joseph. You don't see Joseph up there, but you do see who? Ephraim and Manasseh. Well, we'll get to Levi in a minute. But the one that, yes, you're right. He's not up there. There's another reason for that. We'll look at that when we get to 49. But Joseph is not there, the beloved son of Rachel. Not there. What did Jacob just do? He gave the first son birthright to whom? Oftentimes, and I've been mistaken about this, we give it to Judah. He did not give it to Judah. Gave it to Joseph. How did he do it? Through his sons, two sons. He's given Joseph a double portion through his sons. Pretty amazing. Kind of tricky. Now, we'll get to Judah. Judah gets a special birthright, but he doesn't get firstborn right. That's given to Joseph, the 11th son. So, he says, are mine as Reuben and Simeon. That's verse 5. Then notice verse 6. This is what I was talking about before. And the children that you fathered after them shall be yours. All right, this does not apply to any other children that Joseph might have. This only goes to Ephraim and Manasseh. And so Joseph, I don't know the Bible ever tells us. He might have had other children. It alludes to maybe possibly. And then the way the text is here in English, it almost seems like he did because it's in the past tense. But I don't know the Hebrew grammar there, if that's proper. Let's see. Now, one other important note, and I got to move quick because I'm going to run out of time. Is he does bring up Rachel. Rachel was his beloved wife, yet something happened at the end of her life that was kind of unique from the rest of the family. Did you catch what it was?
She died traveling.
She died traveling, which...
She didn't get to go to the cave with the rest of them.
She did not get to go... She is not buried in the cave of is it Machpelah? Is that, I think it's how you pronounce it. But where was she buried? Where was she buried? Ephrath. You might know where Ephrath is.
Bethlehem.
Who was born in Bethlehem? Jesus. Just interesting connection there. So you have, he mentions Rachel. Now, later he'll talk about Leah. Leah, however, where was she buried?
In the cave.
In the cave with Jacob. She, at the end of her life, finally got the place that she wanted and desired so much all of her life. And she was buried next to her husband, whereas Rachel was not. All right, so I mentioned that. All right, now let's get down to... Verse 14. So, the two boys are brought to Israel or Jacob. And he does something kind of interesting. Verse 13, let's start there. And Joseph took them, Ephraim and Manasseh, He took them both, Ephraim in his right hand, Israel's left. So if I'm Israel, right, and Jacob's walking toward me, they're on his right hand, my left, and then the other boy, Manasseh, is in the other hand. He's on Israel's right. Why do we typically, why right hand? Right hand's typically the first blessing, right? So keep reading. Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand and brought them near him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it across on the head of Ephraim. And then he takes the other hand, he lays it on Manasseh. And so he's kind of doing this number here. The boys are here. And he does this. And then we have verse 15, where we're in giving the blessing. He blessed Joseph and said, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys, and in them let my name be carried on, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." So this initially, what kind of blessing are we receiving? Just a general blessing, right? It's not specific. Although its implications are going to be more specific. So doing this, what's Joseph's reaction? And it says he's displeased. Like, he's kind of upset about this. Like, what are you doing? You're not doing this. And so he tries, verse 17, to do what with his father's hand?
Switch him out.
Jacob says, "No, I'm paraphrasing, but I did this on purpose, right? This is done on purpose." And so Joseph in verse 18 says, "Not this way, my father. Since the one is the firstborn, put your right hand on his head." But Jacob, his father, refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great." Manasseh. "Nevertheless, his younger brother, Ephraim, shall be greater than he, and his offspring shall become a multitude of nations." So he blessed them that day, saying, By you, Israel will pronounce blessings, saying, God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh." Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. So what's kind of interesting is, when we look ahead, and on this map, it's a little more, let me go to that second map, if you will, Si. This one's color-coded. It makes it a little easier to see. No, go down, right there. So if you look at this one, where is Ephraim? It's kind of right in the middle. One of the neat things is later on, when the kingdoms become divided, often the northern kingdom is known as Ephraim. So Ephraim really did gain a lot of prominence amongst the children of Israel. Really kind of neat stuff there. So you got Ephraim there just above Benjamin and Dan. Yeah. At the end of this, I won't read all this, but Jacob makes Joseph promise to do what? Yeah, and he says that God will bring you back, and so I want you to take me to there. He makes him promise to do that. He also gives, in verse 22, Joseph a mountain. This is, from what I understand, a little hard to exactly translate from the Hebrew. I don't know why. Again, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but From what I understand, this is kind of a hard phrase, but there seems to have been some mountain slope that Jacob had either bought and then had to retake, or a mountain that he took from the Amorites. But essentially, he gives that to Joseph. And if when Jesus comes to the woman in Samaria, where does he meet her? It's not called Ephraim at the time, but it's in Ephraim. So in Shichar, right? So this area here, what would that area eventually become known as? Samaria. But that's where Ephraim was settled. It's a big chunk of land. That's a lot of information, but if you have a question. All right. Y'all good? All right, let's move on to 49. I want to cover several things here before we close. All right, so, and I'm not going to read all of this, so you're going to have to go home and read and check me out. But in chapter 49, the sons come before Jacob, and he wants to give them his final blessings. So he begins where? With Reuben. He says, Reuben, you're my firstborn, my might, the first fruits of my strength. Noting that you're my firstborn. You were my first son. Right? There's something about that for a father, his first son. But that's not all good, is it? So there's some praise for that, although Reuben really had no part in that. I mean, he was just first. But he says, verse 4, unstable as water, you shall not have preeminence. What's interesting, and I want to go, as we go through here, I want to note something. I'm going to try to do this quickly, but stop me if you have a question. So, talking about the settlement of the land of Israel, you'll remember that they, after leaving Egypt, they spend 40 years wandering in the wilderness. But eventually, they get to where? They go up through the Moab area. They end up somewhere right here just across the Jordan. And of course, Moses can see the land, but he doesn't take them. Who does?
Joshua.
He's going to lead them across the Jordan. This is where they set up the 12 stones after they crossed the Jordan. Now, so they don't come this way, right, through the land. They come around. And that's kind of important. So I just want you to see that. So when we're talking about the settlement of the land, where are they? Well, they're somewhere here. It's got to be close to Jericho. That's the first city they approach. So it's somewhere here. Now, 10 of the 12 tribes all settle on which side?
Left
side, right here. But two do not. Who are the two? Yeah, so I'm sorry, I said there's 13. So three kind of settle. So you got half the tribe of Manasseh, you have Gad, and you have Reuben, right? They settle on this side eventually after they conquer the land. So they come across, and then they conquer the land, and they begin to settle. So let's look at Reuben to start off with. So this one really shows it well. So if you look up here, it's Reuben. Did I say Simeon? So Reuben ends up over here. What eventually happens with them, with the Moabites? They eventually are conquered by the Moabites. So eventually the Moabites will come north, they'll conquer Reuben. Reuben doesn't have the lasting power that the others do. Part of the reason why they were supposed to go across and they chose to settle over here, but this was the land God had promised, but they do settle there. So Reuben loses what? His firstborn rights. So those are gone. All right. Then we go to Simeon, and what's interesting is he doesn't do just Simeon, but he does Simeon and Levi, and he says, our brothers. I read one Hebrew scholar say that what that phrase indicates is that they're very similar. They're like, they're alike in some way. Remember, these are the two that got in trouble for what? What did they do?
They went to the seek revenge.
Yeah, they sought revenge on Shechem, right? And remember, they killed all the men. And that's why Jacob had to leave that area, go somewhere else because of what they had done. Well, ultimately what happens? They lose their birthright. He said, verse 7, so if you go to verse 7, he says, "Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob, I will scatter them in Israel." Pretty important. What's he going to do? All right, I just read it. "I'm going to divide them up. I'm going to scatter them." This is Hebrew parallelism here in the poetry. So he's saying the same thing basically twice in this particular example. So he's repeating himself. So he says, "I'm going to scatter you amongst the people." That's exactly what happened. What happens with the tribe of Levi? Roger rightly pointed out, no Levi is there on that list. No Levi. Why? They ended up becoming the high priest, and they ended up getting put everywhere. They got no land. They had to rely on the tithing of the people in order to live on. And so they got scattered all throughout the land. I will say, in their positive, who stood with Moses when Moses was challenged by Korah in his rebellion? It was the Levites who stood by him in that. But overall, they lost the land promise. What about Simeon? Si, can you just hit the back button? Go back. All right. Where do you see Simeon on this map? It's right there in the midst of Judah. Now go to the next map. It disappeared, didn't it? What happened to Simeon? They basically were absorbed by Judah over time. By the time you get to the period of the united monarchy and then the divided, there's no more Simeon. Even when the kingdom's divided up the division of the kingdom, I'm sorry, Rehoboam and Jeroboam. Jeroboam, you remember, takes the northern tribes, Rehoboam takes the southern tribes, Jeroboam the northern. You'll notice Simeon's not mentioned in that as a southern tribe, though they're in the south. At that point, they've been absorbed by Judah. So they had been what? Scattered amongst the people and basically dissolved. So we'll talk about Benjamin in a minute. Something happens with Benjamin as well. They don't last very long. But let's go ahead. All right, so then you get to, so the Reuben lost his birthright, Simeon lost it, Levi lost it, and then who does it fall to? Judah. I'm going to go through some of these other ones quicker. I do want to spend just a second on Judah. So Judah is significant. Why? Okay, if you go back one more time. Sorry, I didn't bring my clicker. I would be doing it. Judah, look at the land that Judah possessed. How does it compare with almost every other tribe except for maybe Manasseh? Look at how significantly large it is. It also is a very fertile area. You'll note back in the text, what does he compare Judah to? A lion, right? The lion of Judah. Revelation, when you get there, in talking about Jesus, he calls him what? The lion of Judah. And then you get to verse 10, and verse 10 is a prophecy. And he says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah. Now, when we think about the scepter, what's a scepter? Well, that's a king's stick, if you will, right? This is the thing that he holds that shows who he is. And when he's holding court, the king would hold this between his feet to hold court, and it demonstrates his power and authority. Well, think about Judah. How do they relate to the kings of Israel? David, the first Judahic king, is put, would you say he's the most prominent king of Israel? From there on, there's this promise that there would be what? Any king that would reign on the throne in Jerusalem would come from the line of David, from the tribe of Judah. Who falls in the line of Judah but Jesus? Jesus is our king, just as David fulfilling that promise. All right.
That's an interesting point. The promise about the scepter was before they actually had a king.
Well, before they had a king. Yep. Any other questions about that? I'm going to move through these next ones kind of quickly. Go ahead. Yeah, they haven't even went through the 400 years of slavery, right? And he's already made this prophecy. You have that 400 years, then you have all the time they take to get to the promised land, then they have to conquer it, then they go through the period of judges. Anybody, I can't remember off the top of my head, how long was the period of judges? Is it 400 years? Huh? 350 years, right? So you're already close to 1,000 years before this prophecy would be ever fulfilled. So, just some interesting kind of stuff. Any other things? All right, so I'm going to go through the next ones kind of quicker. So, they come into the land. The next group would be Zebulun. Zebulun, it's promised what to him? That he would have a big commercial base, especially with regard to ships. Now, this one's kind of interesting because is Zebulun right on the coast? You may not be able to see it, but that purple mark up there, way kind of up near Naphtali, that's Zebulun. He didn't have a big area. But he was on a like a canal area that made its way out to the seacoast. A lot of trade came through. And so this tribe settled in that area. Maybe that's got such a small area. This map doesn't do as much justice as the other one. You can see here, but that one's probably a little better on that. Go to that second slide, just because the colors show up. You can see it there a little better. Then you get Issachar. It says Issachar is crouching between what? The sheepfolds or saddlebags. Is another translation of that. But the idea is he was between two things. Well, when you look at Issachar, he was settled between two mountains, one to either side. I'm finding Issachar on this one. But anyway, there's Issachar. Again, I'm visioning it the best, but right there, that yellow area. That's where Issachar was. All right, then you have Dan. Dan is here to the south. Just north of Judah, right there next to Benjamin. It says about Dan, shall be a serpent in the way, a viper by the path. Dan was noted for its warfare and its ability to pursue war. Then you have Gad. Raiders shall raid Gad, but he shall raid at their heels. You'll see Gad, remember, he's on the other side of the Jordan, was raided. Remember what happened to Reuben eventually with Moabites. Gad was raided, but he was able to overcome. You have then Asher shall be rich, and his he shall yield royal delicacies. So notice where Asher is on our list. I thought it was at the top. Am I not seeing him? Oh, I'm blind. Sorry. Asher there. That area is very fertile, which allowed it to be very fruitful in its raising of crops and stuff like that. So that played out just like it was supposed to. Then you have Naphtali. It says it's a doe let loose that bears beautiful fawns. Beautiful people, I guess. There's the prediction. Then you have Joseph. Again, Joseph was broken up into actually two tribes. And overall, you would say Joseph ended up with a greater inheritance in the land when you look at Manasseh, the land coverage it had, along with Ephraim. And then, of course, the prominence of Ephraim later on. Don't ring that yet. I'm not done. All right, you can ring it if you need to. I'm finishing up here. So then you end with Benjamin. Benjamin here is just north to Judah. When the divided kingdom occurs, the two tribes that are noted to go to Rehoboam are Judah and Benjamin. Unfortunately, though, what happened to Benjamin? What? They sinned, and as punishment, most of the tribe was killed. And so they were very weak by the time you get to the kingdom of Israel. Very few. But who was a Benjaminite? Who?
King Saul.
King Saul. The very first king came from the weakest of the tribes, if you don't include Simeon. So.
Did you say they ascend?
What?
They sinned.
Oh, sinned. Yes.
They killed that concubine, right?
Yeah, I believe that's right. I'll get you the reference. Here, Judges 20:16. You can go and I believe that's where it talks about their sin. Or is it? See, is that right? I'll get the reference for you. Sorry, I think it's 20. I think it's Judges 20:16, but I need to confirm that's right. So that completes the settlement of the land, and then following that you have the death of Jacob. We kind of covered that already. He wants to be taken back to be buried with his with their people in the cave. All right, chapter 50. I'm going to finish this really quickly here. I promised I would. I'm going to. So forgive me. So we get to chapter 50. First you have Joseph weeping over the body of Jacob. And then ultimately he takes him back to the land of Canaan to be buried at the cave of Machpelah. And so that's what he does. I want to go down to verse 15, and then we'll get ready to close it out here with a couple of things, just real quickly. What happens in verse 15 of chapter 50? Okay, the brothers are worried about doing Joseph wrong. Maybe want to add to that. This is an issue I think Joseph felt was settled. But if you look there in the text, they say to themselves in verse 15, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil we did to him. So they didn't go to him. Maybe this is part of why he gets kind of tearful about it, was they sent a messenger to Joseph. They don't go to him personally. And then notice how they write it. Your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you. Now please forgive the transgression of the servants of God of the God of your fathers. Joseph wept when he spoke to them. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, "Behold, we are your servants." And so you have this kind of last coming together before Joseph, before we get to the end here and Joseph passing. But they're still not over this. They still bear a lot of guilt. We do that sometimes, right? We hold on to guilt. They did too. But Joseph seemingly held none of that. He has no ill will toward them. He does make an important statement. He says in verse 19, "Do not fear, for am I in the place of God?" So he's not going to bring judgment on them. He's not going to kill them. He's not in the place of God. "As for you, you meant evil against me." There's no denying what they intended for him, and in that it was sinful. It was evil. Yet he makes this application, which is really significant. "But God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones." Thus he comforted them, I love that, and spoke kindly to them. Here's the guy that was offended, the guy done wrong, is the guy offering what? Comfort. Ultimately, what does he put all this to? All that happened, what is this all really about? God's plan, God's providence. That God took something that was evil and he made something good out of it. I'm reminded of Romans 8:26. Anybody remember what that scripture says? "For God makes all things work for good to those who love him." And that's what he was doing in the life of Joseph. And so we see the providence of God at play here. You might think about books like Esther, where this is really prominent. But just in the life of Jesus our Lord, God's providence is all through through the Bible. All right, then we get to the end. It says that Joseph remained in Egypt. He lived 110 years. And it's also kind of interesting. He saw Ephraim's children to the third generation, and the children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were counted as Joseph's own. So he ended up big family. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm about to die, but God will visit you." Very similar language to what Jacob said. "God will visit you and bring you out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, "God will surely visit you, and shall carry, and you shall carry up my bones from here." So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him and put him in a coffin in Egypt. And there he remained for 400 years in a coffin in Egypt. Until when? Until Exodus, yes. Exodus chapter 13 and verse 19. When the children of Israel leave Egypt, it's noted, and Moses notes this on purpose, that they took the bones of Joseph with them. And then finally, he was buried at Shechem in Joshua 24:32. So you have the ultimate fulfillment of that. And so Joseph finally gets home some 450 years later. Took him 450 years to get home, but he finally got home. Kind of an amazing thing. That's Genesis. In somewhat abbreviated fashion at the end, more long-winded near the beginning and middle. Any questions? All right.
Interesting.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, and I meant to bring that up. That's wonderful. It's interesting that it's Jacob supplanting the younger for the older. Jacob literally means what? Supplanter or heel grabber, right? That's why God changed his name.
Don't they all reverse? I mean, in Genesis, they're all younger.
Well, you only have the two, right? Abraham only had one son.
No, there was two.
Oh, I see what you mean. Ooh, I hadn't thought about it from that perspective. So, yes, Isaac takes the birthright from Ishmael, right? So, good point, Roger. I hadn't even thought about it. That's a little different situation. But I guess they're all kind of unique in their own way. But, yeah, so you're right. You have this interesting switching of birthrights. That's.
But I wonder, is there anything with all the hieroglyphics and all that stuff that we in modern day times have uncovered? What do they say about? I mean, it's got to be there. I mean, there's got to be.
So. So I'm not an Egyptologist by any means, but my understanding is some of that history gets erased because of what happens later. And if you're Egypt, you don't want to remember what happened to you at the Red Sea and all that stuff. Winners get to write history. And so that's why you should always be careful with history. Like the church. Why don't we have more information about the church after the development of Catholicism? Who got to write the history? Catholics. And so the same is true in Egypt. That's also why if you read, I'm fascinated sometimes with looking at the history surrounding Assyria, Babylon and the Medo-Persian Empire, as well as Greece and Rome. There are mentions of the people of God, but from my understanding, a lot of times they're negative. And like they completely kind of breeze over the kingdom of David, with the exception of a few important archaeological finds. Ugh. That have been found. We have some different things that mention the house of David on them. But even in that sense of their histories, take for instance, I saw one thing where the king of Assyria had written about his conquering of the northern kingdom, right, and how he came in. Then he also wrote a little bit about coming down to Jerusalem. Do you remember what happened to him when he got to Jerusalem? He sieged the city, he was surrounding it, but what happened in one night? Y'all know this. 186,000 of his soldiers died in one night by the hand of God, not by the Jerusalem. The Jerusalem people were suffering. Who was the king at that time? Do anybody remember? It gets bad. That's your homework assignment. What king was over Jerusalem at the time? I want you to go back and look at that. You'll know them. They're prominent. But But anyway, my point is, when the history was written by the Assyrians, you don't see them defeated, right? They don't write about the defeat, but they make some mentions of the children of Israel. So history is written by winners. And I don't mean really by winners, but who gets to write the history of those who were in power at the time? So be careful with history. We should always be careful with man's history. Good question. Yes, ma'am.
I heard something in studying history from homeschool this week, and they said that the Israelites were in Egypt long before the pyramids were built. So when the Egyptians were recording that history, that was later.
Yeah, so I've heard some different opinions about that. I don't know the answer to it. I have forever thought the Israelites were used in building them, but there's been some information, my understanding, again, not an archaeologist, but they put the pyramids at a different time. But that was been my opinion forever, is that they were involved in that. I don't know if they were. Yeah, you go and watch the Ten Commandments. They go hard on the whole pyramid deal. Because that was the idea. That was the history that people were trying to put things together. We got to be careful putting things together historically, because sometimes they don't exactly line up the way we think they do. Yeah, so Candace was in Ethiopia. Yeah, so Ethiopia was just south of Egypt. Yes, but you also know Candace was not her name; it was her title. Mm-hmm. We don't know her name. Kind of like Caesar, Augustus Caesar. You know, Augustus is not his name; that was the title. Mm-hmm. Good questions. I don't know if my answer is always right. Go check me. I give you my understanding. Good class. I've really enjoyed this. We'll 2 weeks. Read the book of James. We're going to look at James in 2 weeks. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. All right. Nothing else. We'll go ahead and close.